Well, welcome everybody. Lorenzo here needs no introduction. He brought the crazy contraption to give his presentation with. It's almost a dangerous demo in and of itself.
Yeah, it is.
and he'll be telling us all about AV1 SBC. Let's go for it.
You can hear me, right? So thanks, Saul, for the introduction. Yeah, so I'll be talking about specifically AV1 SBC. I'll go a bit in some technical details, so it may be boring here and there, but I really think it's important in order to get a better understanding of how it all works. And this is just a quick introduction over me. So I'm one of the co-founders of a small company based in the south of Italy called Miteco. I'm the main author of Janus, which is an open source WebRTC server, and there are some links if you want to get in touch with me or learn more. And basically what we'll be talking about today is AV1. And if you're not familiar with what AV1 is, it's a new, relatively new video codec that was designed within the context of the Alliance for Open Media. That has a lot of companies behind it. There's Apple, Cisco, Google, really a ton of them. And what they really wanted to do was to create an open and royalty-free video codec. And of course, emphasis on open and royalty-free, because we don't want another H.264 or H.265. Which was specifically designed for real-time applications, pretty much like Opus was also designed as a codec for the internet. So that was a quite important innovation with support for higher resolution, so 4K and beyond. And most importantly, it was also conceived to have support for SBC baked in the codec specification itself. And that's quite important because some other codecs support SBC as well, but many times they come as, let's say, later additions. So basically, codecs are extended to have SBC supported. In this case, AV1 was conceived with native support for SBC. So all AV1 implementations are supposed to, at least at the very least, be able to decode an SBC stream, for instance, which is important when you start working in the hardware decoders and stuff like this. And of course, this got me and should get you all very interested, because these are all very interesting features to have for different reasons in WebRTC. And SBC is important for a few different reasons. So we all know what simulcast is. You use a single M-line to basically carry multiple quality streams, like you have a high, medium, and low quality stream all sent at the same time, so that different qualities can be distributed to different participants as needed. But with simulcast, each stream is encoded as a separate stream, so which means that each stream is also decoded independently of others. But this does mean that you have to encode the same stream more than once, and the fact that they are decoded independently can also cause some challenges sometimes. With SBC instead, you still use the same media source, the same M-line, and so on, but the different qualities, so high, medium, low, whatever it is, are all layers of the same thing. So you have a single video stream that has, like an onion, different layers that basically make each layer provides more detail if you want to look at it that way. And so the key difference between simulcast and SBC is that with simulcast, since you have different streams, you also have different SSRCs. Each quality is a separate RTP stream. With SBC, all layers are the same SSRC. So as far as the recipient is concerned, it's just a single stream, which means that it does require less bandwidth because you can pack some things up and it's more a layer kind of approach. It is sometimes more CPU intensive in terms of encoding because that's a bit more tricky, but it does have some advantages over simulcast as a consequence of that. And an interesting aspect is that simulcast as we know it in WebRTC today actually did already make use of SBC somehow, because when we say, for instance, BPA simulcast, and then we mention temporal layers. Temporal layers are not a feature of simulcast. Temporal layers are a feature of SBC. So we are basically using a feature of VP8 that allows us to use a partial SBC functionality where we can have different frame rates within over the same RTP stream that we are handling. And this is just summarizing it from a visual perspective. So you have simulcast sending three different streams, and then we can choose which, an SFU in the middle can choose which stream to send to other participants. With SBC, we have one big thing that has many layers. One participant may want to receive them all. Another participant may only want to receive the medium layer, and another participant may want to receive the lowest layer as possible. This is just to give you an idea from a visual perspective instead. And so I was very interested in implementing it in Janus, and here are a few links if you want to learn more about Janus itself. And so I started to figure out what we needed to do in terms of what do I need to do in order to get that working. And so first of all, of course, we need a way to negotiate AV1 and the SDP, and that's, of course, a given. We may have, it may be helpful also to be able to detect keyframes in the stream, and that may be helpful for different reasons. So, for instance, when you are doing simulcast as a server, it helps when you know whether a packet is a keyframe or not, especially if you want to switch on a keyframe or stuff like this. It's also important to be able to somehow interpret how the AV frames are spread across RTP packets, and for us it's especially important for our recordings, because when we record stuff in Janus, we just record all the RTP packets that we received so that we can go through them later on. And so basically getting a recording in a playable format just means reorder all these RTP packets I receive, get the AV1 frames out of all those RTP packets, and then put them into an MP4 file, to make an example. And this means that we need to know how AV1 fits within RTP, and we show how that works later. For SVC specifically, there is another important thing that is called the dependency descriptor that I'll talk about in a minute. And so that means that we also need to somehow support that in the server as well, which first of all means negotiating it. All extensions must be negotiated in order to be used. We need to know how to parse an extension of that sort, and then we need to figure out how to use the information that we receive in that extension. And as we'll see, 0.5 is the one that got me the most in trouble, and then I'll explain later why. But starting from negotiation is very easy, so you just negotiate the codec name and the relatively clock rate there, so that's easy. Detecting keyframes and support and basically being able to extract frames from packets is a bit more complicated, but that's because we need to start delving a bit deeper, and so figure out how AV1 is packetized over RTP. And that's actually something that's true for all codecs. So for all codecs, you need packetization rules. And that's especially true for video, because for video, typically, you have larger frames, and RTP packets cannot be that large. They are usually limited by the MTU size and so on. And so you need to have some rules that tell you if you have a frame that is this large, this is how you split it across multiple RTP packets for this codec, and this other codec. And usually, there are some similarities, but usually each codec has its own rules, mostly because of the nature of the bitstream, let's say. And this is an activity that typically the ITF carries on in the ABT core working group, because basically all packetization rules as RTP and WebRTC are all standards. Unfortunately for everyone, it did not happen in the ITF, so they came up with their own specification. Which is provided here. So in this specification, they provide information both on the AV1 aggregation header, that is those packetization rules that I mentioned. So how do I split an AV frame over multiple RTP packets, and how do I get that same frame back when I have access to the RTP packets on the other side? And it also talks in great detail about this dependency descriptor, which is a beast of its own, as we'll see. And this is basically how it looks like from a visual perspective. So with RTP, you typically have an RTP header with all the usual stuff that you all know. You can have some RTP extensions in there, and this is where the new RTP extension would appear. And then you have the RTP payload. And the RTP payload is where this aggregation header plays its role, because as we mentioned, we cannot just dump an AV frame in there because it may not fit. And so we need to have some sort of information that tells us how an AV frame is actually split, or if there are more than one AV frame in the same packet, we need to know that as well. And the AV aggregation header, the AV1 aggregation header is fairly simple because it's just a single byte with a few bits that you can set. Like, I will not go too much into the detail, not to bore you, but just information about whether this OBU, and the OBU is basically the equivalent of a null for AV1. So if you know what a null is for H.264, an OBU is the same thing for AV1, more or less. So it's basically a unit of a frame. And then basically these attributes tells you whether or not an RTP packet that you just receive is a continuation from a previous frame, so that you know that whatever you're receiving now, you have to append to whatever buffer you had before, whether or not this frame is complete or not, whether you have to actually get something, wait for something else before passing it to the decoder. You may have some information about how many OBUs are in place, which is actually optional, and we'll see why in a second. And This bit tells you whether this is the packet that you receive is the beginning of an AV frame, which is, again, all of these pieces are very important when you have to reconstruct the AV frame when you receive it, so that AV1 frame when you receive it, so that you know that this is the first thing that you have to put in there, then you pass this here, this here, this here, eventually you again end up with the complete AV frame. And basically, it looks a bit like this. So in this case, for instance, we are actually aggregating multiple lobus in the same RTP packets. And in this case, we are not specifying that there are that many elements, which means that for each obu in there, after the aggregation header, we have a variable size element that tells us how long each obu is. So in this case, we're just going sequentially. Aggregation header, we know there are some packets. We check the size, then we read exactly this amount of bytes, and this is the first element. Second element, we read the size of that, and we go on and go on and go on. And the W attribute over here allows us to save a tiny bit of space when we use it, because if you say that, for instance, there are just two obus in this element, then this means that you do need to provide the size of all the elements except the last, because then you can read them sequentially by checking the variable size length until you get to a certain point. When you get to the last element, you know that all the bytes that are left are actually associated to that frame, so you don't need that additional variable element in there. So you save a bit of data, maybe not that much, but in some cases it may be helpful. And to use the aggregation header, I mean, I mentioned that it can be helpful in a few different cases. In my specific use case, I basically interpreted that, for instance, not a continuation and a first packet, I can more or less treat as a keyframe. It's, of course, not really always like that, but it at least gives me the beginning of something, which is something that is very quick and simple to use when you're actually just routing stuff. You just read a single byte and make some decisions based on that. For instance, when you need to do some simulcast-related switches, for instance. For recordings, I needed to do something more complex because, as I mentioned, we need to traverse all the RTP packets, reconstruct an OBU frame, an AV1 frame before we can put it into an MP4 packet, which means that I had to actually implement all that depacketization rules accordingly. And also I had to implement the parsing of a specific OBU in order to get some additional information like the video resolution, because if I'm creating an MP4 frame, I don't need to decode the frames, but at least I do need to know how large it is so that I can put it into the MP4 header, for instance, or maybe use the RTP headers to figure out roughly the frame rate, these sort of things. And all that I've mentioned so far is really all that you need if you want to use AV1 normally, just as a regular codec. So in forecast, all streams are independent of each other. So if I want to go from high to low, I can just move to the SSRC with the low quality stream, and I don't need to do anything else. The low quality stream is encoded separately from that other one. I don't need to know anything about that other stream. They're completely independent. With SVC, that's not always true, because you may have some dependencies in place. So if I want to go from, for instance, the highest quality layer, since we are talking about an onion, will very much likely depend on one or more packets from the medium layer and the low layer, which means that I may have to forward those two. Otherwise, the high quality layer will not work, because that alone is not enough to decode something. And these are all things that you need to figure out at runtime, because you have a stream that is coming in and you have to make a decision right away, otherwise you cause delays and stuff like this. And most importantly, most of the times you may not even be able to parse the payload, because, for instance, if insertable streams are used and the stream is end-to-end encrypted, you cannot have a look at the payload to see what is what. So, and this is what the dependency descriptor is for. The idea that you have an external component, so an RTP extension that contains all the information related to the packet that you just received. And this one would not be encrypted as the payload itself, and so it's something that an intermediary like an SFU can use to do something. And this is just one example that comes from the RTP specification over there. There are really a ton of examples. In this case, this is an example of how L2 T3 dependencies work. L2 T3 means two different spatial layers that depend on each other and three temporal layers. So two video resolutions and maybe 30, 20, 10 frames per second. And this gives you an idea of how the dependencies work as a frame goes by. So this is the first frame, second, third, fourth, and so on and so forth. And so you'll see that in this specific kind of approach, the first packet you'll receive will be related to special layer 0, temporal layer 0. And pretty much everything depends on this packet over here. And then if I want special layer 1 and temporal layer 0, I definitely need to relay this packet too. Otherwise, this one will not be able to be decoded. If I'm interested, and basically you follow the arrows and you have an idea of the kind of dependencies that you can do, so that you can choose which